From the Professional Disc Golf Association, this is PDGA Radio News.
And welcome. It is the Disc Golf News for the week of May 2nd, 2005. I'm Brian Sullivan. Coming up this time, if your goal is to improve your game, you have come to the right place. Sports psychologist Dr. Betsy Schoenfeld is back to help us work on the mental game. This time, the discussion is on setting goals.
Goal setting is a very simple, straightforward motivational technique that if you do it right, it works for most everybody, and it's not that difficult to do.
Plus, Todd Branch is here with some tips for disc golfers who can't practice as much as they used to in the 60-second clinic. We've got results from last weekend's Dogwood Crosstown Classic in North Carolina, some surprises there, and we will debut a new segment this week. Jay Redding, also known as Yeti, will be sharing some of his experiences and observations from life on the PDGA Tour. That and more coming up on this edition of PDGA Radio News. Brought to you by No Obstacles Disc Golf at plu-ent.com and by Innova Champion Discs at innovadiscs.com.
The Champion Sidewinder from Innova is the latest addition to the state-of-the-art Champion line. The Sidewinder is designed for long turnover shots and long-distance rollers. The extra-long glide will add D to your drive no matter how big your arm is. And the Sidewinder is made with Champion line plastic, so it holds up round after round. Your game just got better with a new Sidewinder from Innova. Number one in disc golf.
It was mad skills galore this past weekend in Raleigh, North Carolina for the 21st Dogwood Crosstown Classic. Results coming your way, beginning with the Masters Division, and Bobby Evans of Burlington tears it up, has a terrific fourth round. He's going to win by five over Chris Heisel, who will take second place. John Disco takes third in the Masters. To the Women's Division, and oh, what a match it was. Back and forth between Juliana Korver and Des Redding. Korver has won twice in the past 2 weeks. Would she make it three? Well, in the wind and the rain, Redding tears it up in the second round, shoots a play rating round of 10-15. She's going to win this one by two over Korver, who takes second place. Valerie Jenkins takes third, and Carrie Berlanger, who is struggling this season, takes fourth for the women. Now, in the Open Division, who? Brad Hammack? Yes, he is playing open this weekend, and in the second round, shoots 12 under on his way to the victory. He's going to win by a single stroke. And in second place, tying up is the pro rookie, Justin Jernigan. He'll tie up with world champion Barry Schultz for second. And another pro rookie tied up for fourth with Kenny Climo. That would be Alexi Bubis. These guys beat a terrifically tough field, including Walt Haney, Brian McCree, Schweberger, Larry Leonard, Dave Felder. It was an awesome event. And what is the deal with Brad Hammack playing in the Open Division as opposed to Masters? We put that question to tournament director Kirk Yeo.
Well, two reasons. One was there weren't that many Masters that had signed up. Said, you know, Brad, you're the third highest rated player in the tournament. You know, the only two other guys higher rated than you are former world champions. And so, in my opinion, you should be playing open just because you have just as good a chance of winning as they do. And so, at the last minute, he said, okay, I'll play open.
Time now for the 60-second clinic. Are you the type of person who used to play all the time, and for one reason or another you find you just can't play as much as you used to? If so, this clinic is right up your alley. Our guest this week is former PDGA competition director Todd Branch. He is a five-year veteran of the PDGA Tour. I'm talking play every day, tournaments every weekend, 50 weeks a year. This year, Todd not out there on the tour, and as a result, he's noticing changes both with his body and with his game.
So, you don't get out to the course as often as you used to? The new job and family responsibilities don't allow you to practice your 200 putts a day? Do you only have time for maybe league night once a week and one tournament a month? Is your rating falling faster than Allen Iverson's hopes for an NBA championship? Welcome to the club. Since I'm also in this situation, let me share a few observations that might help you with the transition. I need to stretch more than I used to. Constant disc chucking used to keep me pretty loose, but now my muscles seem to go through a stage of denial when I hit the course. I find that they work best when I can ease them into a round of golf. I've noticed that when I'm not playing much, the first thing to go is putting. I find that if I have some extra time after stretching and throwing a few drives, that a little extra putting goes a long way. My timing gets off when I'm out of practice. Sometimes I nearly trip over myself on the tee pad. I usually do better when I remember to keep it slow and fluid. Slow and fluid is easier on the muscles, too. I try to make a conscious effort to be easy on myself. Hey, I'm out of practice. I got to expect to mess up a couple times, right? This also helps to ease the performance pressure we all put on ourselves. Last, I try to show off a little bit. Throw the tough shot once in a while, even though it might not be the smart money shot. I like to run it a long putt with a nasty slope behind the basket now and then. Sure, it might not be the right thing to do if I want to win, but it's time for fun now. That's what all those days practicing was for anyway, right? Maybe when I'm at Worlds in Philadelphia, Allen Iverson will come out to the course and see me having so much fun and will just quit basketball and start playing disc golf.
Todd Branch is a frequent contributor to our show and was a full-time disc golf road warrior from 1999 through 2003.
Hi, this is Des Redding, and you are listening to PDGA Radio News.
In the big picture this week, one of our most popular guests is back. She's Dr. Betsy Schoenfeld of Western Kentucky University. She's a sports psychologist on faculty there, and she joins us on occasion to help us work on, improve, and otherwise fiddle with the mental game. Our topic this week is setting goals.
Dr. Betsy, good to have you back.
Well, thank you, Brian. It's always good to be here.
You have chosen to discuss with us this week goal setting as we try to continually improve our mental skills. Let's first talk about why goal setting is important.
Well, when we're out on the course, we want to be able to focus our attention and our effort on the key components of our game that are really going to make us more effective in our performance. And goal setting is a very simple, straightforward motivational technique that if you do it right, it works for most everybody, and it's not that difficult to do.
So what does make a good goal? What are some of the things we need to think about?
Well, the most important thing is that the individual, the golfer, understands what the goal is and that the individual accepts the goal. If, for example, you have a coach and he or she just simply assigns that goal to you and you don't really accept it, it's not going to work to motivate you. It's not going to direct your effort. Likewise, if you don't understand the meaning of the goal, then it's not going to work. But if we're talking, as we probably are in most cases here, about self-set goals, then we're probably going to accept that goal and we're likewise going to understand what it is we're trying to accomplish. So first we want the goal to be accepted and understood.
I think I would have to agree that for most disc golfers, the goals would be set, you know, by the player themselves as opposed to, say, a coach or something. So, fair enough. What's next?
Well, the goal needs to be specific and challenging. Now, that first one seems a little bit inconsistent because many of us set goals for things such as, I'm going to go out and have a good round, or I'm going to go out and do my best. And we tend to think that that's a good thing to do. But in reality, what the research says is that we need to be more specific than that. A very general goal such as do your best or simply play a good round is not going to give us enough direction that's really going to improve our performance. So we want to be specific. For example, if we say, I want to take 2 strokes off my score on the back nine, that's much more specific than just generally having a good round. So we want to be as specific as we can in terms of what we want to accomplish. And we also said we want the goal to be challenging. What we mean by that is we want it to be difficult but attainable. We want it to be realistic. If the goal is so high that it's unrealistic, then it's going to fail our first criterion. We're not going to really accept it. If I, as an average golfer, say I want to go out and shoot a 70, that's not going to happen. I can set that goal, but it's not going to be effective in helping my performance because it is unrealistic. So we want something that's realistic but challenging so it will stretch us, but we also want it to be specific.
That makes perfect sense. What else do we need to think about?
Well, we also need to think in terms of a measurable goal, because what's really important is that at the end of the round or at the end of the period for which we've set the goal, we want to know whether or not we've accomplished that goal. So we have to ask ourselves, How will I know if I have accomplished this goal? If we can answer that question, then we probably have a measurable goal. Now, obviously, if we can quantify it, if we're talking about number of strokes or number of fairways in regulation or number of putts, then that's a quantified goal, and it's very easy to know how to measure that. But we can't always quantify our goals, and it's not always necessary to quantify our goals.
When you say it's not always necessary to quantify our goals, can you give me an example of a situation like that?
Okay, let's say you've been listening to the Mental Skills for Disc Golf tapes on the website, and you've decided you want to improve your attitude towards your game. So you're going to try and use more self-talk and have a better attitude towards your game. Well, that's a little hard to put a number on, but you still might do something such as at the end of each round, think to yourself, am I using positive self-talk? Was I using negative self-talk, and did I stop negative self-talk and replace it with positive self-talk? So if at the end of round you can simply say yes or no to that, then that would be an indication of whether or not you've accomplished your goal. You might even quantify that by counting the rounds that you are able to answer yes or the rounds that you're not able to answer yes. So that's not really a quantified goal, but at the same time you can get some indication of whether or not you've accomplished it.
Okay, so let me summarize where we are at this point so we don't get lost in all of this good information about goal setting. We need to accept and understand our goal. We need to have that goal be as specific and challenging as possible, and we need that goal to be measurable. What else about goal setting do we need to understand?
Well, a very important part of goal setting is feedback in relation to that goal, and this goes hand in hand with the measurement part. We need to keep track of our performance in terms of how well our performance is accomplishing that goal. So at the end of the round, if we set a goal or even more than one goal for that round, we need to look at ourselves, look at our performance, and see whether or not we've accomplished it. Feedback does two really important things. One, it's a source of motivation. You can kind of think of this in terms of a test. You may remember back in school when you took a test, even if you didn't think you did real well, you were still eager to get your paper back to see what that grade was, because feedback is motivational in and of itself. But even more importantly, feedback can provide us information about a strategy for improving our performance and attaining our goal. If we set goals for our drives or set goals for our putts, and we look at that and we see, well, we've accomplished our goal on our drives, but our putts are failing the goal, then maybe we need to put a little more effort and attention on our putting. So we can use that feedback to let us know if we've attained our goal, and if we have, then recognize that. Pat yourself on the back. If you did not accomplish the goal, you need to look at why that happened. Was it your strategy on the course? Was it a lack of effort? Was it a lack of focus? Maybe there's some extenuating circumstance. But that information can provide you with what you need to know to do better on the next round of golf. You may need to change your goal the next time you play, or you may decide that you want to keep that same goal because it was challenging for you. So that feedback is a critical component for goal setting. It helps to set a goal, but it's not going to be nearly as effective if we actually follow up and see whether or not we accomplished that goal and why we did or did not accomplish it, and that's where feedback comes to play.
Most of the examples that you've been giving us today have to do with fairly short-range goals. For example, I want to improve X number of strokes this round, etc. What about long-term goals?
Well, that's a great question, Brian, because we actually need both long-term and short-term goals, and in fact, we need to set those goals a little bit differently. For goals that are more long-term, we want to think in terms of outcomes. That might be a season-long goal. If you're playing in a certain number of matches, how many of those matches do you hope to win, or how many of those matches do you hope to achieve a certain score? So we're looking at the outcome, the bottom line. But for short-term goals, when we're talking about for a particular round, or when we're talking about even more so for a particular hole, we want to focus on what we call the process. The process is the performance that's necessary to achieve that outcome. So if we have a long-term goal of averaging under 100 on each round of golf for a season, then each round of golf we need to focus more on the process, on a specific hole. What am I going to do on this hole? Maybe I'm going to lay up on this side of a body of water, then try and hit an approach shot up toward the green, and then actually putting in to make the score. So by focusing on that process in the immediate term, it will help us attain our long-term goal of the score for that particular round and for the particular season. So long-term, we want to think in terms of outcomes. Short-term, we want to think in terms of process, the performance that will help us reach that outcome.
As an educator, it does not surprise me that you have developed a mnemonic device to help us to remember all of this information. Can you explain that?
Well, yeah. Some of us use the term SMART, S-M-A-R-T, to help us remember these keys to goal setting because, as you mentioned, we've gone through quite a few. S-M-A-R-T, the S is for specific, the M is for measurable, A is for attainable. That's a challenging but realistic so that we can attain it, and the R is for realistic, and T is for timely. Are we talking long-term or short-term? Do we want to focus on the outcome or the process? So S-M-A-R-T, specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, timely goals.
For our listeners, we encourage you to get out there and set some SMART goals. And for you, Dr. Betsy Schoenfeld, our thanks as always.
Well, thank you, Brian. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Our pal, Dr. Betsy Schoenfeld, is a sports psychologist on faculty at Western Kentucky University. She spoke to us from her office there, and you're listening to PDGA Radio News. Got something new for you to check out this week, disc golfers. Do you know the name Jay Yeti Redding? No? How about his more famous wife, former women's world champion Des Redding? Starting to ring a bell now? Okay, well, Jay in his own right, a very good disc golfer and probably one of the best putters in the world. And Jay is going to be checking in with us on occasion to deliver what we're calling the Yeti Road Report. And the Yeti this past weekend was in Raleigh, North Carolina.
This is Jay Redding, a.k.a. Yeti, and I'm proud to bring PDGA Radio a new segment on perspective and stories from life on the road of the professional disc golf tour in 2005. This will be the Yeti Road Report, where my traveling companion Des and I will travel 30,000-plus miles this year, crisscrossing the nation in pursuit of disc golf everywhere. And this week, I come from the gorgeous state of North Carolina. The tour started off great so far this year. We've got lots of highlights that include stops in Charlotte, North Carolina, where some Texas Hold'em action saw three world champions all in at the same table. We've been to Brian Schweberger and Ashley Barnes' wedding. That was quite the blast, which probably has the highest player rating wedding party of all time, with a 10-13 average from Billy Crump, Brian McRae, Barry Schultz, Walter Haney, Larry Leonard, and Ken Climo. And this week we had a great time at the Dogwood Crosstown Classic with Kirk Yeo as the TD helm and Jennifer Yeo, who's definitely up for Hostess of the Year so far in the early running. They had 25 disc golfers staying at their large, beautiful Yeo complex. Great barbecue, homebrew from Craig Gringloff, and even late-night mullet shavings, where we saw Brian Schweberger lose all of his delicious wedding locks, and Ed Perot-Williams even got the team trim shaved into the back of his head. That was pretty fun to see. And, of course, you can't beat to North Carolina without getting away with gallons and gallons of sweet tea. That's right, sweet tea. Don't be walking around in here asking for a glass of cold sweet tea, please, because your dialect will surely tag you as a foreigner. It's sweet tea for a reason around here. Now, I'm from Iowa, and we're known as the corn state. Here in North Carolina, I've always referred to that as one of the tobacco states, but as a lot of the native Carolinians have told me, a lot of the tobacco is now grown in southern Asia. So it made me wonder, what will North Carolina do now without a thing to call their own in the state? Well, 2 weeks here in observation, and I think I've figured it out. North Carolinians are all about the biscuit. That's right. Flour, buttermilk, a little lard. It seems easy, but this southern cuisine is actually quite crafty, and not all biscuits are the same. In fact, you can find biscuits pretty much all over the place if you start to look for biscuits. Of course, we know Hardee's, KFC, Popeye's, they all have biscuits, but even the McDonald's has biscuits and gravy, and I've never seen that anywhere else. They've got chains of biscuit restaurants. Zaxby's has like 50 ways to eat your chicken and biscuit. There's even a restaurant chain named after a fictitious city about biscuits called Biscuitville. And, of course, course, the world-famous chicken and biscuits come from Bojangles. Now, this place is like McDonald's. I mean, there's a Bojangles like every three blocks in any North Carolina city that you go to. And talk about biscuits. Well, they've got them. I mean, at Bojangles, you can get the chicken filet biscuit, the sausage biscuit, bacon biscuit, ham biscuit, egg biscuit, the gravy biscuit. Don't forget the Bo-Berry biscuit and, of course, the popular Cheddar Bow biscuit. Anyway, you get the idea. Biscuits are abound in the Carolinas here. And, in fact, we even saw a place called the Feed Barn, whose marquee featured fresh back fat biscuits. And, yes, there was no U-turn to go back to see what that was all about. But, North Carolina, I think we got you covered. Tobacco out, biscuits in. This is Yeti for PDGA Radio, and I'm out.
And what, pray tell, is going on this weekend, May 7th and 8th? The National Tour is headed to Waco. It's the Waco Charity Open. Do not miss it if you are anywhere in the vicinity. Plus, the Owensboro, Kentucky, Davis County Open. Bunch of stuff in California. It's the Morley Field Spring Fling in San Diego. In Grass Valley, it's the Mother Lode that's pros only. And in Browns Valley, it's the Browns and Bows all going on in California this weekend. In Japan, it's the Gifu Open, plus Roseville, Minnesota hosting the Acorn Open. Pros are headed to the Atlanta Open in Georgia. In Orangeville, Ontario, it's the Brampton Breezy Trees, plus Ohio hosting the Columbus Point Series number 2. In Amarillo, it's the Disc Crazy Shootout, Grand Junction Shootout in Colorado, plus the Iowa Tour Pickard in Indianola, Iowa. Bunch more. Get the full list. PDGA.com. And finally this week, let's run down some PDGA points leaders. These numbers are actually almost a month old now, but there's been so much else going on lately, we just haven't gotten around to it, so let's get around to it now. And we'll begin with the pro divisions. The open leader as of April 6th was Barry Schultz with 2,160 points. Leading for the women is Juliana Corver with 204 points. Other open leaders include Tom Embry, Suzette Simons, Dave Dunapace, Carol Silverthorne, and leading the Grandmasters, Lian Yu Chen. For the amateurs, it is Robert Leonard, Emily Hardy, Robbie Dunn, Andy Lehman, James Stewart, Edith Harrell, and Jim Yount, all leading their respective divisions. For the juniors, your points leaders are Matt Hall, Coral Sauls, and Nicole Fraser. And that is going to do it for the Disc Golf News for the week of May 2nd for the PDGA. I'm Brian Sullivan. Our sponsors this week are No Obstacles Disc Golf at plu-ent.com and Innova Champion Discs, innovadiscs.com. Until next week, I hope you will get out there, huck some plastic, stay out of the shul, and keep them in the fairways.